Straight Talk on WRHI is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop for another edition of our Straight Talk program, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Good Pharmacy is with us, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road to Camden Avenue in Rock Hill, as is highspeedweb.net that streams our signal 24/7, 365. Well, how much do you out there listening know about the Federal Reserve System? Well, you're like me, I know absolutely nothing. So we have brought to good old Substation 2 Dr. Laura Ulrich, who most of you know from Winthrop University. She is now a regional economist with the Federal Reserve. She's come down from that suburb to the north, and we're going to annex one of these days and straighten them out, called Charlotte. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So where do we begin on this? How long have you had this job?
Yeah, so I started February 26th of 2019, so about 10 months ago, going on 11 months ago.
I didn't know, I told you before, I didn't know a thing about this until you came down here to speak to this group at Winthrop about a month or so ago.
Yeah, I left, you know, I've been in Winthrop 12 years, love Winthrop, love everything about Winthrop, nothing, you know, people are like, why'd you leave? I only left because the Federal Reserve offered me a job, you know, because when you're an economist working for the Fed is pretty exciting, but yeah, I got offered the position, and after a lot of stressful nights thinking about it, decided it was the best thing for me for right now. So I'm still teaching one class a semester at Winthrop and still going to all the basketball games and doing other things around there. So I think that's why a lot of people didn't realize I left, because I didn't really leave.
How about the Eagles? 3-0 in conference play. Is that not good?
I'm super excited about the game tomorrow. So.
All righty. So in simple layman's terms, what exactly is the Federal Reserve and what does it do?
Yep. Great question. Okay, so the Federal Reserve, you may hear it sometimes called the nation's bank. We're the central bank of the United States. So most countries, the central banks are called something like the Bank of England or the Bank of Russia. You know, in the United States, we actually had two failed central banks before the Federal Reserve was created in 1914. So that's why it's named the Federal Reserve and not the Bank of the United States, because the first bank of the United States failed, actually, if you're familiar with kind of the history of Alexander Hamilton. So what we do is we actually do multiple things. The thing that people mostly know us for is monetary policy. So you may be familiar with the name Jerome or Jay Powell, as he goes by. That's the chairman of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve. He, along with the presidents of the Federal Reserve Banks and what we call the Board of Governors, determine monetary policy and set interest rates for the United States. So that's what most people know about the Fed. But we also do a lot of other research, which is what I'm a part of, as well as that monetary policy process. We handle all the money that you spend every day. So we're part of the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond. There's 12 banks across the United States, and North and South Carolina are part of the Richmond Bank. But we have a branch in Charlotte. So in the basement there, every dollar bill, $20 bill, $100 bill that's spent in the Carolinas, once it leaves a bank, it comes to our Fed, and we count it and store it, because as you can imagine, banks don't want to hold all the money they have in their own vaults, right? and we also hold the new money when the Treasury prints, when the Mint prints it, and distribute that as needed.
So when Charlie Ruffalo makes a deposit into his bank, the money goes to his bank.
Correct.
And then when they get too much money,
correct,
they send it to you.
Yes.
And then they go through this process you were telling me.
Yeah.
It's kind of flushed.
It's amazing. So it's I could just hang out downstairs and watch this cash process all day, because it really is amazing. And the fact that the Fed does this so efficiently is just incredible to me. But the money comes in from armored cars. It is counted by hand the first time, kind of spot check to make sure that there's what, you know, if there's they call them straps, the stacks of cash, that there's the right number of straps in each bag that comes from banks. And then there's a high-speed counting machine that not only does it count the money, but it also checks it to make sure there aren't contaminants on the bills. It also checks the quality of the bills. So if you have a dollar bill that's really worn, when it comes to the Fed, it's going to be shredded. Also, for you Clemson fans out there that are stamping orange paws on $2 bills, those are going to be shredded because they've been defaced. So anything that's damaged is shredded, and in that process, they also replace those damaged bills with clean bills, some of which are new money, some of which are just stored old money. And then banks, when they need cash or when they need to put money, companies that own ATMs, it may not all be traditional banks, right? So it might be a company that owns a lot of ATMs. They'll make an order. They come pick up the money and take it. And then it's clean and stacked and counted. It looks much prettier when it's going out the door, as you can imagine, than when it comes in to the Fed.
And I think you mentioned to me that on any given day, about 25% of the money is scrubbed and new stuff put in?
Yeah, so dollar bills, about 24 to 25% when I've been down in the basement and looked anyway, of those bills are shredded when they come through, because dollar bills are used more frequently, so they go through. They're kind of damaged more. the larger bills, they don't turn over as much, so they aren't shredded as often. But yeah, out of every, you know, every, there's, you can see in the machines when the money's shredded, it kind of goes up into the ceiling. You can see it's just kind of constantly being shredded and new money's being put in.
Fair to say that there must be a quite a level of security in this whole system?
Yes. So our building is very, very secure. We're right kind of catty corner to the Spectrum Center up in Uptown Charlotte. And yeah, if you came to visit me at work, I'd have to put your name in a system. And then when you got there, they would, it's kind of like going through airport security, but highly secure environment, lots of cameras, as you can imagine. So I definitely feel really safe at work. Really, really safe.
So they are kind of like the umbrella over all of the banks that are out across the nation.
Yes.
These 12 central banks.
Yes.
And then each one of those 12 central banks has...
Well, there's one central bank. There's 12 branches.
Yeah.
But one thing that most people don't know is each of those 12 banks are independent, nonprofit, private organizations. So when I took this job in February, it was during the partial government shutdown, and people were saying, like, don't take the job. You're not going to get a paycheck. I'm not a federal government employee. I'm an employee of the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond. The folks that work for the Federal Reserve in Washington, D.C., so the people that work for what's called the Board of Governors in D.C., they are government employees, but the rest of us are not. So it's a private nonprofit organization. And some of the things are coordinated across the system. So there are certain things where, so to give you one example is IT. There is a national IT that, because as you can imagine, they want the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond to be just as secure as the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, which is just as secure as the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco. So that's standardized across what we call the system, but then many other things are very bank specific.
Do you, meaning the Federal Reserve, are you the ones that print what I call the funny money, the money that doesn't exist, to cover excesses that the government spends?
No, so those are done through that's done through basically IOUs, government bonds that are you talking about the money that the government kind of lends to itself?
You got
yeah.
it.
Yeah, so that's done mostly through the Social Security Trust Fund, I believe, but no, we don't do that. The Federal Reserve does buy a large percentage of the bonds that are purchased. If you look at who holds government bonds, the Federal Reserve holds a lot of them, because we have all this with the money we have. That's part of what we do for monetary policy, is buy and sell treasury bonds.
Well, when it comes to monetary policy, it always seems that the Federal Reserve is in the crosshairs of elected officials.
Yeah,
and I mean it's just the way that it is, because every elected official at the presidential level wants nothing but the economy to robust, and you're the kind of the checks and balances to that.
Yeah, and the great thing, you know, for 17 years I taught a class called Money and Banking, which teaches about the Fed, and in that class I always taught about the importance of the Fed being independent from politicians and from the federal government itself. And you know, when you're teaching, it's one thing to read it in a book, but then it's very different to live it out. And that, people have asked me, like, what's been the biggest surprise for you going to the Fed? And the biggest surprise to me is how wonderful that independence is, really. You know, in the 10 going on 11 months I've been there, I haven't heard a political opinion espoused. There's no I mean, we might interact with elected officials sometimes, you know, at different presentations we do, or, you know, just to meet and greet people in our district. But the Federal Reserve is independent. Like, the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond president is not hired by politicians. He's recommended by the board and hired through that system. So it's not a political process.
Well, I thought, for some reason, I thought the chairman of the Federal Reserve was a presidential appointee.
Yeah, so the chair, the board of governors, which is seven people, the chair is Jay Powell, so he's one of those seven. They are nominated by the president and approved by the Senate. They each get a vote in the monetary policy process. But the presidents of the 12 banks also have votes. They rotate on who votes, but they also have a vote, and those people are not appointed through a political process at all.
Okay.
So it is a very independent system. And as an economist, I really appreciate that, because if you think about the way policy is done, you do have fiscal policy, which is Congress, Senate, President, and they're doing, you know, working on government spending, taxation issues. And then you've got monetary policy, which is dealing more with interest rates and money supply. And we see how long it can take for policy to get through on the fiscal policy side, right? And not only how long it takes for it to get through the fiscal policy, using fiscal policy, but also how a bill that's written that might be the perfect bill from an economist's point of view, by the time it gets signed, it could look very different, right? Because it's changed through the political process. On the monetary policy side, you have 12 experts, very bright, very highly educated people who are sitting down and discussing what should be done and voting on it with an entire team, a huge team of researchers and experts behind them, helping them make those decisions. So it's a really clean, in my opinion, it's a very clean, independent, impressive process.
You wonder whether internally that group of people around that table making those decisions, if they are influenced, they have to be somewhat, by the external political pressures that are put on them.
I mean, we're all people, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's impossible, I think, to pretend that people don't have some level of influence, but I just know in the meetings I'm in leading up to those, I'm a part of that FOMC process, so I'm in some of the meetings, and they're just very thoughtful, and at our bank anyway in Richmond, they're very thoughtful, and it's really, you know, having the people at the table you would want to be there. It's people who, you know, I went to school 10 years to be an economist. It wasn't an easy process to go to get my PhD, and I do it because I'm passionate about it, right? And so you've got other equally or more so passionate people talking about the thing they know a lot about, and so it's refreshing.
So take me through what your job is. You're the regional economist for the two Carolinas.
For North and South Carolina. Mm-hmm.
So what's a typical week like
for
you?
Yeah, so my job is pretty unique, and honestly, until about a year ago, I didn't know the Fed had economists like me. But we have, you know, within each bank, there are a lot of research economists that are doing pretty traditional academic research. These are really impressive folks, really impressive research that they do through the Federal Reserve, publishing in journals and high-quality journals. And they are also, you know, writing white papers and policy briefs for the Fed. And then also there are what are called regional economists. That's what I am. And so we are mostly out and about meeting with business leaders, doing what we call having what we call industrial roundtables, which I had one this week, which is where we get, you know, this week we had 12 business leaders, CEOs or near CEOs, around a table in Charlotte talking about what is going on in their businesses right now. And so we are able to collect data on the ground and then inform the president of what we found.
Well, based on your one-on-ones with these individuals, is the economy as good as everybody says
it
is?
Yeah, so overall the economy is still growing pretty strong. I mean, like right now, third quarter growth came in for GDP came in at 2.1%. It was projected to be 1.9%. I saw the jobs number came out today, 145,000 jobs added nationally last month. We need about 75,000 jobs added each month to keep up with population growth. So 145,000 jobs is very healthy and robust. And we've been at that level or higher every month, just month after month. The economy is doing well. That doesn't mean every sector is doing well. There are certain sectors, manufacturing, the manufacturing sectors that were hit by the tariffs. If you talk to those folks, they're struggling. Some of them are struggling. But overall, I would say the majority of the people we talked to have had a very good 2019 and are expecting a strong 2020.
And apparently, I think the first part of the week, the president is supposed to sign part one mm-hmm. of this new, and I forgot what the nomenclature is,
yeah,
the thing to replace the...
NAFTA.
Yeah,
and I think there's been a lot of uncertainty, you know, between with NAFTA and with the tariff situation in China and with other countries too. And then obviously earlier this week we had the Iranian issue that, you know, there's been a lot of uncertainty. Some of that seems to be clearing. It looks like they're close to a deal with China, and Brexit is clearing up a bit, and yeah, NAFTA will be replaced. So things are settling down a bit. Earlier in 2019, like I would say around summertime, people seemed a little more nervous, though the uncertainty had reached a level that made some people uncomfortable. But now things have settled.
Well, I'm not going to get you into a political conversation, but it is interesting that this economy is just, and I know it goes in cycles, no matter
right.
who the heck is
That's
in office,
right.
it's going to go in cycles. But this cycle is really probably the most robust cycle I can remember
in my adult lifetime.
It's the
longest expansion in history, in the U.S. history, since we've been measuring GDP. So as of July, it was the longest expansion in history. But in the business that I'm in, people will joke and say, so people ask all the time, like, when's the next recession going to happen? We got to go into a recession soon. Well, not necessarily. We could expand. You know, there's countries, Australia is well into their expansion they're in now is 20-something years. Hopefully, it'll be interesting to see what the fires do
yeah.
to that. But they've been in a decades-long expansion. But we always will say expansions don't die of old age, they're murdered. So something could happen tomorrow, right? I always tell groups that because you probably heard me say it when I did the presentation over at Winthrop. I mean, I can stand up and say things are going well, the economy is growing, we're adding more jobs, South Carolina's unemployment rate's lower than ever. But then tomorrow something could happen where people could say, gosh, that Laura Ulrich is really, she doesn't know what she's talking about.
Economy is impacted by politics.
That's
and
right.
We're in a presidential election.
Right.
And if there's a change of guard,
uh-huh.
no matter what it is, House, Senate, or,
right.
or the executive
right.
office, that could just turn everything
yeah.
upside
down.
Yeah,
there's always, election years are always interesting because there's always just a little more uncertainty.
Yeah, to say the least.
Yeah.
Tell you what we're
going
to do. We're going to take our mid-program break. Remind everybody that you are listening to Straight Talk live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Now, even though you're in the Federal Reserve, you really know that the most important things in life are what's going on right here in Rock Hill. Fresh subs and salads prepared right before your eyes 7 days a week. Anybody who knows anything about this knows the magic white letters, and we're all going to say it together at the count of three. One, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice. Slice. Garden, 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 garden.
Not bad. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI.
Hey, Manning, I hear the gyros are back at Substation 2.
That's right, Alex, and they are great. They're made to order, served hot, on warm, soft pita bread with creamy tzatziki sauce, onion, and tomato. And I can't wait to get one.
Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
This is Danny Rogers with Paul Davis Restoration. When you are faced with damage to your home, there is only one company you need to know, Paul Davis Restoration. Only one company with 50 years of corporate support and 20 years of local presence. Only one company with 8 trained and certified water mitigation techs on call and ready to respond to your loss 24/7, 365. There is only one company you need to know. Call Paul Davis Restoration, 803-329-1140.
Relax. Love your car payment with an auto loan from Founders Federal Credit Union. If you're ready to buy your new car and start making those unforgettable memories, Founders features an easy online application, flexible terms, low rates, 24-hour account access with Founders Online, and fast, friendly service. Visit relaxjoinfounders.com or one of our more than 30 offices to see if you qualify for membership. Relax. Love your car payment with Founders. Founders Federal Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.
These days, there are plenty of ways to stay connected to the internet. Laptops, phones, tablets, games, you name it. But the more devices you use in your home, the tougher it is to get a strong, consistent Wi-Fi signal. Comporium's premium Wi-Fi kit adds multiple Wi-Fi access points throughout your home, eliminating dead zones and interference, while spreading your signal more evenly so you can enjoy a better online experience. Right now, get our premium Wi-Fi for only $9.99 per month. Premium Wi-Fi from Comporium. Connect your whole home.
Good Pharmacy, building trust for four generations.
This is pharmacist Kia Hicklin. Enjoy our spacious new modern look and take advantage of Rock Hill's original drive-thru with pickup and drop-off service.
My mom loves Good Pharmacy.
Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue, Rock Hill.
Here's another great catering idea from Charlie Ruffalo at Substation 2.
Well, we have the giant party subs. We make them any way you want, usually like our number 19. They're delicious and will feed a crowd.
Whatever your catering needs, Substation 2 has lots of options. Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Dr. Laura Ulrich is with us today. Many of you know her from Winthrop University, where she established herself as an economist par excellence. And now she has morphed on up to the Federal Reserve, where she is a regional economist, a job she's had for not quite a year. So you go out and you talk to a lot of these industrial people. Mm-hmm. You sit down with them, find out what's really going on, seeing where the rubber meets the road, right. And you send that info back to those who are in the policy making part of the Federal Reserve. So what are you learning about the Carolinas? Let's talk about South Carolina.
Yeah, so South Carolina has really had a fantastic 2019. I mean, the unemployment rate, to give you an example, unemployment rate nationally right now is 3.5%. That's the lowest since 1969. So we're in a really low unemployment rate environment. But in South Carolina, it's even significantly lower than that. It's 2.4% as of last month, which is the lowest South Carolina has ever had. And typically, you know, if you look at the historical timeline, it's South Carolina has had an unemployment rate that's higher than the national average more than they've had one that's lower than the national average. So for us to be that far below the national average when it is already low, it's pretty impressive.
So what do you attribute that to?
Yeah, you know, I've thought about this a lot because I am all over the state. And so it's not surprising. It shouldn't be surprising to anybody that there's certain parts of the state that are doing really phenomenally well. Charleston, of course, Greenville, York County. But there's also the second fastest growing MSA in the country right now in terms of employment is Myrtle Beach. Number, I think it was 4 last month, is Hilton Head. So it's also some of the smaller metro areas in South Carolina, they're growing well. I think what is happening in South Carolina is we don't have any very large cities in South Carolina, but we have a good number of moderate-sized cities where that were really primed for growth. And if you think about Greenville, Spartanburg, or York County, there's no geographic boundaries to the growth, right? There's not an ocean or a lake or, you know, there's nothing to prevent growth. I mean, Greenville, Spartanburg really can just be Atlanta and Charlotte growing together almost, which is
true.
Practically happened nowadays at this point. But so we had some cities that were well primed for growth. We have good interstate systems in South Carolina. Also, we have a high quality of life. So companies that are looking to relocate when they're doing their site selection searches across the country. One thing I have learned from talking to people is that over time, kind of the quality of life factor has become more important to people. And so when they're looking at where do we want to live, somewhere where the weather is nice, close to the beach, close to the mountains, you know, we have a lot of what people are looking for. So, in cities where you can still have a reasonable commute time. Housing is low compared to other parts of the country, right? We think housing prices around here have gotten high, but you go price out a similar house in the Washington, D.C. area or the, you know, the Bay Area in California, and you'll see that prices look pretty good here. So I actually did an analysis this last month looked at the data to see where people are moving. Like, these people that are moving to South Carolina, where are they coming from? And the top two states would not be surprising. It's North Carolina and Georgia. And we get about the same number of people from North Carolina and Georgia that we send out of South Carolina back to North Carolina or Georgia, since they're our neighboring states. But the next two are even more interesting because you might think, well, maybe it's Virginia and Florida or something close to us, but it's not. It's New York State and California is fourth. And in New York and California, we're getting way more transplants from those states to South Carolina than we're sending back to those two states. So,
in fact, I had a story on the air this week that said in 2000, I guess it was last year, 2019, 2018, whatever, 80,000 people That was 80,000 and 120. One of those two numbers had left the state of New York for new territory.
Right.
They did not want to live there anymore.
Right.
Now, California was interesting. The analysis was their population is staying pretty much the same. Even though people are leaving, what's being replaced is our, what do you call them, professional immigrants or something?
Yeah, migrants. Yeah, people are there moving from overseas.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, and, you know, I think the fact that we're getting so many people from New York and California tell you it's a cost of living factor, right, because it's so expensive to live in both of those places. And then from New York, also the weather, if you ask, that would be a big
And I'm surprised
factor.
You haven't mentioned taxes.
Yeah, so taxes. Okay, so I'm a tax economist by training. That is... You know, people ask me, like, what do you love to study? State and local taxes. Doesn't that sound exciting? Yeah, I'm really cool. But so taxes do matter, but in all the analyses, they don't matter as much as we think they might. So if you look at why people move where they move, it really is more things like weather and commute times and closeness to family or things like that. Taxes are a factor, but they're not as big as we might think.
So are you seeing or hearing, as you do these roundtables, any indications such as we hear from time to time with the, I shouldn't say this, the unbiased national media, that, in fact, some type of recession or slowdown is out there?
We're not seeing anything right now that it looks like the growth has slowed slightly. So we had stronger growth in 2018 than we had in 2019. But we don't see anything to show that we're headed towards negative growth. Now, something could happen tomorrow. I think earlier this week, seeing what's going on in Iran, what was happening there, thankfully it looks like it de-escalated a bit, but it could have escalated, right?
Sure.
So whenever we have major international conflict or other issues, like something could happen that would really change that. But right now, no.
So let me ask you about Boeing. Mm-hmm. Boeing is a big part of South Carolina, growing. Even though we don't produce the 737
right.
MAX here, Boeing has been hit as a company.
Mm-hmm.
They got hundreds of those things sitting on the tarmac.
Mm-hmm.
They're not flying. Just heard on the news on the way over that one of their major suppliers is going to put off 2,800 people. What kind of ripple do you expect?
Yeah, we've been looking at this pretty closely because, as you mentioned, they do not make the 737 MAX in Charleston. But as many of you probably know, that Boeing does have a major presence in Charleston. And because of that, a lot of the Tier 1 suppliers for Boeing have located themselves in South Carolina near Charleston. So there will be a ripple effect. I think how large it is yet to be seen. These companies that are laying people off, if they can get these issues fixed and they start making them again or start making something else in a higher numbers, you can see them add those employees back really quickly, I think. But the longer this goes, the less likely that is, I would say.
You know, it was interesting, though, when Boeing itself stopped the production of the 737, they did not lay off any of those employees, of their employees. They kept them on the line because they need them for
other
the Dreamliner
things.
And
yeah.
what have you. So.
Right. Yeah, and those suppliers, you know, they're going to have to adjust. You can imagine for them, while this crisis has been going on, Boeing's continued to produce the MAX. But you would think that probably many of them have been trying to adjust to the idea that what if that stopped? And so hopefully some of them have pretty good contingency plans.
And then, of course, we have all these other major industries that come here.
Right.
Michelin and
Absolutely.
BMW has been here forever.
Volvo,
BMW has
Mercedes.
Changed the face of
yeah.
South Carolina. Well, doggone it, we've run out of time.
Thank I'll you come so back much. Another day.
Promise?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Thanks
Enjoyed
for having
it.
Me.
Dr. Laura Ulrich, our guest this afternoon on our Straight Talk program, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. All right, don't forget, the weekend is here. We want you to have a good time. We have got all kinds of football for you all weekend long, and of course, on You've heard about this big game coming up on Monday?
Yeah, I heard one or two things, even though I'm a Georgia fan.
Oh, my God. Bulldog. All right. That's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program. Don't forget now, we're here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, where we produce fresh subs and salads 7 days a week right before your eyes. And even people from the Federal Reserve in good old Charlotte, North Carolina, know how it's done down here at Substation 2. 1, 2, 3. Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden. Everybody's got it. Have a wonderful weekend. See you on the radio Monday. Bye.